Okay, it is July the 13th, 2023, and in today's podcast, what we're going to do is go over some of the information that we talked about in the other two, the last two videos, but we're going to try to give it a little bit more graphical representation. So I've been doing a lot of presentations with different people, going through this material with them, one to get some feedback, some, you know, to kind of expose them to it for the first time. And one of the things that I constantly have a problem with is that I have a massive amount of information that I'm trying to get across to these people. So I'm, you know, when I go in and I start trying to present this stuff, one of the last ideas I had prior to what I'm doing now, or what I'm going to try to do today, is I actually created, and I got to find it here. I created a presentation folder. And so one of the first things that you need to understand is that the United States, the term the United States, is not talking about the country. It's talking about the District of Columbia. And so I needed to kind of prove that fact. And so what I ended up doing is I took all of the Supreme Court cases that I had found that had talked about the jurisdiction of the United States, or the, you know, all of the different elements of the United States. And then I found all of the UCC codes, the USC codes, the IRC codes. And I took all of those and I combined them into a single document that I could easily just click through, read the relevant code or Supreme Court case decision, and then move on to the next one. The problem is it's still overwhelming. I've got so many different Supreme Court cases, and they're all saying basically the same thing, that the United States is the District of Columbia, and that its jurisdiction is only within the District of Columbia and not within the several states. So I have all of this information, but it's still a little overwhelming to try to get across to people when they are sitting down for the first time looking at this. Because, you know, this is an example of the United States code. If I go up here to income taxes, here's all of the cases and codes that are relevant to income taxes. And then I've got citizenship, same thing. I've just got a massive amount of backup to support the fact that there are multiple types of citizens that exist in this country, and that they're the primary two, well, the only two, is a citizen of a state and a citizen of the United States. And so I feel like I have more than ample evidence that these things are true. But what I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to kind of streamline this process to fit it into something that people can actually see, that they can relate to. So in this presentation, we're going to try the new method of communicating this information and see how it goes. And so what I have done is I have created what I call a citizenship graph. And I'm going to go through it in this video, and we're going to kind of walk through the different elements of it. From a bird's eye view, what we have here are all of these blue colored boxes that are over here on the left. And in fact, I need to change the colors of these two because they're actually relevant here. These blue colored boxes are actually, and I'm using Obsidian, by the way, to track all this stuff. And by the way, if you go to constitutionalcounty.us, I took my database, my Obsidian database, and I put the whole thing up online. It's on a homepage there, and it gives you a little instruction as to how to get to it. So it's on the main content of the website. So if you're interested in getting my database to actually go look up the Supreme Court cases yourself, you're more than welcome. Just a few key things about my Obsidian database. I am absolutely not putting anything in my Obsidian database related to the politics stuff unless I can validate exactly what it is. And so a good example is the sovereign citizens. They like to run around and talk about birth certificates and UCC filings and all this stuff that they have absolutely no backing for. They've got one woman that spouts all this insanity, and maybe it's all true. But I have to date found no evidence that there's three constitutions. I found no evidence that the flag was ever the flag that the sovereign citizens are flying. I found no evidence to support the fact that they take our birth certificate and kill us and then bring us back as a straw man. Again, it may all be true, but they've not supplied a single bit of evidence. And in fact, to be totally honest with you, I have been completely blocked by every sovereign citizen group that exists, not because I go into their groups being ugly, but because I go in their group asking questions. I literally just asking, you know, where's the code to support this particular thing? And that's all you have to do to completely get blocked out of the group. You can be the nicest person in the world, they're still going to block you. So that's something that you need to kind of keep in mind. If you get into a group and they refuse to answer questions, or they pretend that you're just supposed to go do the research yourself, that is an example of someone that themselves does not understand what they're actually telling you. And so you really need to be careful about who it is you're listening to and what they are saying. To be clear, I am not proposing that any of this stuff is what you need to do or anything else. All I am doing is researching a topic that I find very interesting, and I'm trying to supply as accurate information as I possibly can. And so the only promise that you have for me is that if I put something in here that is incorrect, I will go back and correct it, and I'll correct whatever it was that I said. So I'm not pretending that I know all this stuff, you know, that I'm the genius behind all this. I get a lot of it from books. And then what I've done is, you know, I've kind of found that most of the books that I'm reading have about half of the court cases, or half of the code sections that they refer to, are inaccurate or don't exist. And it's possible that they've changed since the book was written. But the Supreme Court cases shouldn't have changed. I find it hard to research some of this stuff, because you spend more time researching one paragraph that you read out of the book than you do reading the book. So it takes a lot of time to do this, and I'm trying to make sure that we're not wasting time, and I'm sharing every bit of information that I can with you. There's no charges. You can use my Obsidian database as much as you want. You can teach people with it. I don't care. My only thing is if you're going to charge people to actually teach them, then you're not welcome to use my data. You should go do your own research if you're planning on taking people's money to save our country. I have zero respect for you people. So let's get into this. So we have this database. And so what we're going to do here is I'm going to zoom in, and we're going to start from right here in this center. So we're going to zoom into this area right here. And so the primary thing that we start with is the fact that we have the District of Columbia, which is also referred to as the United States. And then we have the several states, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, those places. And they're usually referred to as the several states, or the Union states, or the states of the Union, or the United States of America, or the United States. So this is the confusion that the powers that be have taken advantage of, is the fact that both the several states and the District of Columbia have been and are referred to as the United States. And so they have taken that word, those three words, or two words, however you want to look at it, they've taken those words and they have used them against us, because they assumed that we were never going to go read to see what they were actually saying. And that's the beginning of everything. Now, from the several state side, what we have is we basically come down here and look at a couple different things. So the first thing that I want to point out, and so to be clear, every single point that I have on this image is going to be referenced by one case or one UCC code section. Keep in mind that document that I showed you a second ago has 20 or 30 of similar Supreme Court cases that say the same thing. So what I've done here is, instead of showing you all the different evidence that I have, I'm only showing you one piece of evidence. But just be aware that all of the note, all the little notes that you see on the screen actually have multiple references to back up what they're saying. So the first thing is a U.S. Supreme Court, Hanley versus Donahue. It says, for all national purposes embraced by the federal Constitution, the states and the citizens thereof are one, united under the same sovereign authority and governed by the same laws. In all other respects, the states are necessarily foreign to and independent of each other, their constitutions and forms of government being, although Republican, altogether different as their laws and institutions. So what that one Supreme Court case is saying, and again, I have many others, it's saying that the states are independent from each other as they are from the federal government. So the federal, there, and this is something that's really, you have to understand, there is not a single entity in this entire country, in the entire government body, that has jurisdiction over the entire United States of America. So, and when I say that, I'm talking about the 50 states, Georgia, California, all the different states. There isn't a single authority that has jurisdiction over the whole country. And that's important to keep in mind. So whenever you read something in the tax law and it says a citizen of the United States and within the jurisdiction thereof, well, because that those in jurisdiction thereof automatically takes out the possibility of the United States, the words the United States, being the whole country, because nothing has jurisdiction over the whole country. And so they put that in there, and it's something you really need to pay attention to when you're reading these things. Now, so we've proven, or again, we've a little piece of the proof. We have proven that states are separate from each other and the District of Columbia is also separate. So that was just a side note. So now I want to come up here and I want to take a look at a couple other things. So this is 8 U.S.C. 1101A21 of the definition of national. So the term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. State, national, born in the state of union. And now that last part I added, but it is, you're a natural born citizen of a state, and that your allegiance is to your state of Georgia or Florida or Tennessee. So that is what a national is, and that is the definition supplied in the USC code. Now I want to throw something out. If there wasn't any such thing as this, and if this didn't exist, then why would they have a definition of it in the UCC code? They specifically went out. They don't define every word in the English language in there. They only define the things that might be questionable, and that is in there. Now, we go from a national over to a non-resident alien. That is also in 26 CFR 1.871-2, non-resident alien. The definition, non-resident alien individual means an individual whose residence is not within the United States and who is not a citizen of the United States. So that's what a non-resident alien is. Now, if you go on from there and you look over on this side, we've got foreign in 26 U.S.C. 7701A5. Foreign means foreign. The term foreign, when applied to a corporation or partnership, means a corporation or partnership which is not domestic. So we need to look and see what domestic is. And we'll get to that in just a second. In fact, I may have actually left. Actually, no, I think I put domestic over here. So domestic with relation to the United States of America or the District of Columbia or the federal government, they're all the same thing. Domestic, the term domestic, when applied to a corporation or partnership, means created or organized in the United States or under the law of the United States or any state, unless in case of a partnership, secretary provides otherwise regulations. The point here is, again, there is no law in this country that governs the entire country. If the federal government passes a law and a state's going to abide by it, the state's got to pass that same law. And as an example, if the federal government adds a constitutional amendment or they pass a constitutional amendment, It is still up to every state to go through and authorize to put that in their constitution, in the federal constitution, and then they will all abide by it. But up to that point, there is no restrictions on that state having to follow that law just because the federal government went and did it. And so, again, it's important to understand that there is no jurisdiction that covers the entire country. So that was the word foreign. So let's look at what a foreign estate is. So this is 26 USC 7701 A31. A foreign estate means an estate, the income of which from sources without the United States. Now, they say, instead of saying outside of, they say without and within. And so sources without the United States means outside of the United States. And again, it's the District of Columbia, which is not effectively connected with the conduct or of a trade or business within the United States, is not includable in gross income under Subtitle A. So a foreign estate means that anything, any money coming from outside of the United States that is not connected with the United States. So what that means is that if I'm working with a military base and that military base is paying me money, that money is taxable under the federal government because that money is coming from the federal government and therefore they can tax the income of that particular money. But that is it. They cannot tax the reimbursements or the money that you're receiving at a state level because they have no jurisdiction at this level. And so that leads us up here. So we've got our non-resident alien, which all of the tax code says no federal jurisdiction within the Union States to implement any federal regulations or statutes. So essentially, a non-resident alien doesn't pay taxes. They have no jurisdiction over a non-resident alien. And again, non-resident means you don't reside in the United States, and alien means that you're not in the United States. You're not a citizen of the United States. Now let's go back over here to where we started, and we end up with the District of Columbia, again, also known as the United States. The District of Columbia, through the 14th Amendment, and here is the 14th, or no, let's see, that's not the 14th, I think I have the 14th in here somewhere. Anyway, we will stay focused. The United States citizen got created after the Civil War with the 14th Amendment. That is when that particular citizen got created. If I look right here, this is the Board of Registrars. It says, there are then, under our Republican form of government, two classes of citizens, one of the United States and one of the state. One class of citizenship may exist in a person without the other, as in the case of a resident of the District of Columbia, but both classes usually exist in the same person. So this, again, backs up the fact that there is a United States citizen and they were created by the federal government. This is not a citizen of a state and can never be a citizen of a state. So now we'll bounce back over here, and this statute, this is Caja versus United States. It says this statute is one of universal application within the territorial limits of the United States. Again, territorial, that's the territories of the District of Columbia, and is not limited to those portions which are within the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government. Now, this case was looking at like jurisdiction between a military base and the actual District of Columbia. And so what they're saying here is that a territory of the United States, the federal government has jurisdiction over it just as much as it does the District of Columbia itself. And then it says, generally speaking, within any state of this union. Now, I want to one of the reasons that I put this here is if an IRS agent or a government official tries to make the argument that the United States is actually talking about the whole country and not the District of Columbia, and they want to ignore the jurisdictional arguments, this is an example of them saying within any state of the union. So when they want to talk about the states of the union, they actually do talk about the states of the union. There's actually UCC code. I don't know if I have it on my graph. I might want to add it, but there's a UCC code that actually refers to the states of the union. So when they want to talk about the states of the union, they do. So when they use the word states in their code, it is purely to mislead you. It is not the state of Georgia. It is their states of their district. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. But anyway, it says the preservation of peace and protection of a person and property are the functions of the state government and are not part of the primary duty, at least of the nation. The laws of Congress in respect to those matters do not extend into the territorial limits of the states, but have force only in the District of Columbia and the places that are within the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government. So this one Supreme Court case actually covers a whole lot of different elements of this argument. So now we are going to look over here. This is a federal area. So when they're talking about the national government, they also refer to it as federal areas. And so the definition of a federal area means any lands or premises held or acquired by or for the use of the United States or any department, establishment, or agency of the United States, and any federal area or any part thereof which is located within the exterior boundaries of any state shall be deemed to be a federal area located within such state. So that is a federal area. It's essentially territories of the federal government and military enclaves, those things, post office. Now, from there, we're going to jump up here and we've got a couple different things. So first off, let's start over here on the left. Alice and Company versus Evett. The term United States may be used in any one of several senses. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of the sovereigns in the family of nations. It may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends, or it may be the collective name of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. So again, that's why if you look over in the sovereign states, I had United States there because they use that term to reference that. So now let's take a look at one more Supreme Court case, Alla versus Cornfield. It says there's a distinction between citizenship of the United States and citizenship of a particular state, and a person may be the former without being the latter. So again, more evidence that there are two types of citizens. So now we go to code sections. So these are all Supreme Court cases. Now let's look at the UCC code again. And again, if these things didn't exist, then why do they have them in the UCC code to give you definitions and explanations of them? And so state citizens, actually, I want to start over here with the 26 USC 7701A1. This is the definition of a person. The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual. And then it goes on to mention some other stuff, trust, associate, corporation, all that stuff. But the individual part is what I wanted to key on because they don't really define what an individual is. We kind of have to look at it from a couple different perspectives. And so that is the definition of a person. If we look at a citizen, a state citizen, it says citizens and residents outside the United States. If any citizen or resident of the United States does not reside in and does not have the principal place of business in any United States judicial district, such citizen or resident shall be treated for purposes of this section as residing in the District of Columbia. So what this is doing is it's essentially taking you're a United States citizen. And again, this is talking about state citizens of the United States. And it's taking you and it's saying that even if you reside outside of the United States or outside of the District of Columbia, they are going to include you within as if you were residing in the District of Columbia. Now, again, if you're going to try to make the argument that the United States is talking about the whole country and that the District of Columbia is only in Washington, D.C., this combines them. This is basically saying, any citizen or resident of the United States, they're a resident of the District of Columbia. Why would it say that? You're a United States citizen. Why would it say that you're a resident of the District of Columbia? And again, it's all over. It's all about jurisdiction. And so now we have the term taxpayer is any person subject to any internal revenue tax. And then it goes on to say who is a citizen. So this actually goes over here for citizens that are residents outside the jurisdiction. It says who is a citizen? Every citizen born or naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction is a citizen. Now, again, there is no entity in the United States that covers the whole. There's no governing body that covers the entire country. So when they say and in the jurisdiction of the of thereof, or however they want to say it, and in its jurisdiction, they are automatically telling you they're not talking about any single thing, because nothing has jurisdiction over the whole country. But the District of Columbia has pure jurisdiction over all of their territories in their area, and they happen to be called the United States. And so this, again, has been written to confuse you in what they're actually saying, but in reality, they're actually talking about the District of Columbia. They're not talking about the country. And so then we go on over here. This is 26 USC 7701A30. Person, United States person. The term United States person means a citizen or resident of the United States. Again, over here, you'll notice that they took anybody that didn't live in the District of Columbia but happened to be a citizen of the United States, and they say that they're going to make it look like you reside in the District of Columbia, even if you don't. Why would they do that? That's a little weird that they would say that they're going to make you reside there just because you're a citizen of the United States. But they have to do that in order to tax your income, because they need you to be a subject of them, not a sovereign citizen of the state of Georgia or whoever it happens to, whatever state you happen to be from. So more proof that they are playing games here. And so then we're going to come over here. This is income tax on individuals. So again, remember, they did not define an individual, but we know that a person is an individual, and we know a United States person is a person who's also an individual. So we've kind of linked the fact that a person and an individual are both the same thing. Both of them happen to be a United States citizen. So as a state citizen and not a United States citizen, you're neither a person or an individual with respect to the tax codes, or with respect to the entirety of the UCC codes. So the next thing is we got 26 CFR 1.1-1C. And this says income tax on individuals. Again, you're not an individual, so this doesn't apply to you, but read it. Section 1 of the code imposes an income tax on the income of every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States, and to the extent provided by Section 871B and 877B of the income of a non-resident alien. So again, they have now mixed up non-resident alien with someone that has to pay taxes. So let's take a look at how that works. So first off, we have 877, which is an expatriation to avoid tax. I'm not really sure what their heading is there, but it says the gross income shall include only the gross income described in Section 872A. Well, 872A is, it actually goes through, let's see, we'll just see if this will let me click on it here. Oh, all right. So 876A says the gross income, which is derived from sources within the United States. Again, if I'm working with a military base and they're paying me, this is telling me that I have to pay income tax on that money because I am receiving money from a federal area. I'm receiving it from a District of Columbia territory or state. So that is what that says. And then if you look down here, this is 26 USC 871, tax on non-resident alien individual. And it says, except as provided in subsection H, there is hereby imposed for taxable year 30% from sources within the United States by non-resident aliens. So again, it's just another code section that says that even if you are a non-resident alien, if you're receiving money from a federal area, then you have to pay income tax on that money. So if you're a federal employee, you work at the post office, and you get paid by the United States government, you have to pay income tax. If you're a police officer and you're receiving money from the federal government, you have to pay income tax. So there are government employees that have to pay income tax. It depends on whether you work for the state or the federal. If you're working for the state, I've not gotten into the state side yet, so we'll save that for later, but that's a whole nother conversation. But the point here is that with what we have that we're looking at, the evidence is unbelievable that we've all been duped into believing that we're supposed to be paying income tax when we are not United States citizens. And I want to throw one more thing out there to all you sovereign citizens that are watching this that think that I'm crazy. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that the birth certificates are used to register you as a United States citizen. There is no evidence that the Social Security number is used for that purpose either. And I would argue, based on the fact that I have been reading UCC code sections for so long, that I'm actually getting good at it, which is kind of scary. I have not seen a single example of anything illegal, not lawful, or non-lawful, but illegal inside of the UCC codes. Everything matches up and everything is there that ought to be there. They know they can't tax a state citizen, and so they have non-resident alien in there to deal with that particular person. So they also know that they can tax anything that is in the jurisdiction of the United States, and so they want everybody to think they're in that jurisdiction. But the whole thing, I believe at this point in time, I could be wrong, and if I am, I'll correct myself later, but at this point in time, I believe they just allow you to fill it out. And that's why they say that the income tax is voluntary, because you are volunteering to participate as a United States citizen. You're electing to give them your money and say that it's income. So I'm pretty sure that's why they say that the whole thing is voluntary, because it's absolutely not voluntary if you're a federal employee or live in the District of Columbia. That is not a voluntary tax. That's mandatory, because they are your dictator. And so if you live in the District of Columbia or you're a federal employee, you are a subject to the federal government. The federal government is a dictatorship. It's got a political body that runs it, but it is, for all intents and purposes, it is a dictatorship with just a lot of little fingers that make it operate. But that is kind of a pictorial view of what I was trying to get across with all those Supreme Court decisions and all the other stuff. So let me know if you think this got through it a little bit better and it's a little easier to look at, and we'll touch up on the next video.